This episode of Travel Today with Peter Greenberg is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, your travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to the podcast that's done from a different location around the world every single week. One day Canada, the next day Thailand, then New York, London. You just never know. This week, we come to you from Palm Beach, Florida, at the legendary Breakers. For those of you who've never been to the Breakers, think about this. It was founded in 1896. It is a legendary, iconic piece of architecture, and its enduring appeal is that it's timeless. It is an amazing experience, a place with at least 8 different restaurants, 4 different pools, 140 acres of oceanfront property, a half mile of private beach. I mean, and of course, they've been indulging guests for years, and I'm lucky enough to be one of them to be able to, you know, basically get on the air and talk about it. But the point is, it's real. And I'm not a golfer, but I appreciate what they've done with their golf course as well. I drive a mean golf cart, though. The author of, well, Palm Beach, what an amazingly original title, The Essential Guide to America's Legendary Resort Town. His name is Rick Rose. Rick, thanks for coming.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank
now,
you so much,
you talk
Peter.
About it being a legendary resort town. Prove it.
Well, sure.
Don't mention Donald Trump.
No, don't worry about that. It's a legendary resort town because it's the first resort town in the United States. It can claim that because it's the first purpose-built resort town. So I don't know how much you know about the history of Palm Beach, but I can give you a few comments about that.
Sure, go ahead.
Florida became a state in 1845. And President Jackson sent down troops about that time to round up the Indians and get them out to the reservations. And the whole peninsula was wilderness down here in this area. But the water on the backside of Palm Beach Island was a part of the transportation route between the different forts, the military installations, Fort Pierce, Fort Jupiter, Fort Lauderdale, and Fort Dallas, which, of course, is now Miami. When he was down here and they secured up the area for settlers to come down here, the area was just basically farming until the arrival of Henry Flagler.
And Flagler made the difference.
Henry Flagler was a man who really changed Palm Beach into the first resort.
And now they mentioned the trains, too.
Right. So he discovered the area. And, of course, the charm of the coconut palms is what charmed him here. And that's, of course, the funny little story. Coconut palms are not indigenous to the state of Florida, but they landed here on a ship in 1878. So we got coconut palms here in Florida, and that really charmed my Flagler to build his hotel down here.
Why?
Because he knew that if there were coconut palms, there was no frost.
Ah, that's how he figured out the weather.
Exactly. He had already built a hotel up in North Florida in St. Augustine, but he wasn't real happy with the weather up there. So he built his hotel down here in this big coconut grove.
And it's existed ever since 1896.
Well, the first hotel actually opened in 1894. And then roughly about a year later, the state of Florida gave him that 100-foot-wide swath of land from St. Augustine all the way down to Palm Beach to build that train, the Florida East Coast Railroad. And that was completed in 1895. So that's the reason why I can claim to be the first resort town, because it was the first purpose built.
And people came by train.
They came by train, and it was very exotic to come all the way down from New York in a train all the way down to the tropics.
My first train trip, if truth could be told, I was 8 years old. We took a train from New York to Florida, and I'll never forget it. It was wild and wonderful and crazy and slow, but it was fun. And I'll never forget, you know, taking that train with my dad and my mom.
Well, that was all Henry Flagler who started all that. And I think as a result of Henry Flagler bringing in, you know, that Gilded Age atmosphere here, that's what really makes Palm Beach a little bit different than other resort towns in Florida, because it has a little bit more older culture.
Well, let's talk about this particular architecture here at the Breakers, because let's start at 1896. One of its enduring appeals is that this place seems timeless.
Absolutely. So the current building was built in 1927, so it's not the original building. The original building was more of a Victorian era on the lakeside. But the architects of the Breakers today were the famous Schultz and Weaver, who designed the Waldorf Astoria in New York City as well. So it's quite a grand palace now.
It's built strong.
Absolutely, and that's why the famous architect Addison Meisner did not get the commission to build the hotel. That was a bit of a scandal. So the Flagler descendants wanted to have it concrete block, so they went with someone who could build something a little bit more sturdy.
We're talking to Rick Rose, the author of Palm Beach, The Essential Guide. You've been down here for a long time. You're from here.
I was born and raised, but you know,
one of the only people I'm talking to on the show today who's not from New York, Long Island, or somewhere they're freezing right now.
Yes, there are a few of us around, and like every teenager, I couldn't wait to move away because I thought it was the most boring place for grandparents.
But
I ended up coming back to my hometown.
And you stayed here because?
Because of the incredible weather and the diverse community here. It's a great place to live and have a business.
When you take a look at the Breakers, because it's an iconic piece of architecture, and it really is almost branded as almost a trademark of Palm Beach, right? It's one of the great last big resorts in America that's lasted so long it's become a destination in and of itself.
Absolutely, yes.
What's its legacy?
Well, it's a legacy. The legacy of this hotel is that it has made Palm Beach probably the most desired luxury resort destination, certainly one of the most desired destinations worldwide. And it has set the standard here locally in terms of hospitality. So there's so many things that have happened here at this hotel as well.
I mean, I think of Palm Beach, you know, you think of Worth Avenue, of course. You
right.
think of big mansions.
Right.
I mean, look, Mar-a-Lago, before Donald Trump came here, was it Marjorie Merriweather Post?
Exactly. That was exactly, yes. In my book, I actually talk about the five must-sees and must-dos. And, of course, the first I would say would be the Flagler Museum, Whitehall, where Henry Flagler, of course, had his home. And then the Breakers is number two on the list. Number three is Worth Avenue, as you mentioned. But really getting out and seeing some of the architecture in the island, the lake trail was a wonderful experience, to experience the houses up close, to ride your bike on the 6 or 7 mile lake trail, and then a driving tour. It's really fantastic.
Well, it's certainly accessible by bike these days.
Bicycle as well as driving. That's the great thing about Palm Beach. Even though it's an exclusive, wonderful resort town, it's actually accessible to everybody.
And now you've got the Brightline train.
Right. You can get down to Fort Lauderdale in 30 minutes and Miami in an hour. And what's happening is we're getting a lot of folks from Fort Lauderdale coming up here to West Palm Beach and Palm Beach.
You mean outsiders?
I know. It's
outsiders are coming?
Well, this is the Palm Beaches, as you mentioned before.
Yes.
So when we say the Palm Beaches here, we mean Palm Beach, West Palm Beach, North Palm Beach, South Palm Beach, Palm Beach Lakes, Palm Beach Gardens, Royal Palm Beach, and a few others too.
That was pretty good. Can you name them all?
But that was just about all of them.
Okay. You know, I think about Palm Beach going back to the 2000 election. Right, because that was Hanging Chad time.
Yes, yes.
Right here in Palm Beach County.
Right here, ground zero.
Yeah, Hanging Chad. We haven't heard that term in, well, what, almost 18 years.
Yeah, in many ways, I kind of miss the fact that we don't do everything by paper anymore. Maybe we should go back to that.
I'm a big paper fan. I read newspapers by hand. I don't do anything online. I still like to hold it in my hand. Right?
I agree, especially when it comes to voting.
Well, these days, yeah, you want a paper trail. You
Absolutely.
Want a paper trail.
Right.
I mean, in the world of Facebook and big data and everything else, I want a paper trail. I mean, otherwise, what are you going to do, right?
I know, absolutely. You just don't know what they can do in terms of hacking and whatnot.
Well, since you're from around here, not one of those out-of-staters, my question to you is, walk me through, other than the five must-see places, let's talk about must-see eating experiences for you. Where do you like to go to eat?
Well,
and think of it as, if it's not in the brochure, I'm going to like it a whole lot better.
Right. No, the West Palm and Palm Beach area really has a blooming, blossoming restaurant scene right now. And it's in Palm Beach and in West Palm Beach, all very close. But I like Bukan, you know, the Chef Clay Conley is his name. He has a great restaurant there. And he also opened a restaurant over in West Palm Beach, Grotto. But Bukan's a lot of fun. If there's no question, it's in terms of hot seen restaurants. St. Ambrose is very popular in Palm Beach, but I like some of the classics. The Palm Beach Grill is great.
Yeah.
But there are these new restaurants, in particular over in West Palm Beach, which I think Table 26 would be right up there as a great restaurant. And a small favorite in downtown is the Avocado Grill in West Palm Beach.
It's Avocado Grill.
Farm-to-table restaurant dining. It's great. And that's a new trend here locally, is restaurants opening that are really serving local produce. And
well, it's about time.
Absolutely, I agree.
It's about time. Plus, you've got such a long growing season here, it's not difficult to source great fresh produce.
Well, this was the growing capital of the United States for the winter months for decades.
Well, let's talk about the winter months for a second, because I'm a big fan of getting rid of seasonality. I don't think it really exists except in people's minds. I'm a big fan of off-season travel, because mm-hmm. that's where you're going to have the best experience and the best deals and the less crowds and better service and all those things. Palm Beach is very much a seasonal place.
Well, we have two seasons here in Palm Beach. A lot of people have the misconception that it's only the winter season. So we have a pretty strong summer season for families because, you know, the Atlantic Ocean doesn't get that warm like, you know, the Gulf of Mexico. So it actually stays rather comfortable in the summer months. So as long as you're near the ocean in the summer months, it's very reasonable here to have a family vacation. And you know what? The kids only want to go swimming at the beach or in the pool. So they don't care whether it's an exclusive hotel up in the Northeast somewhere, in Nantucket or in the Hamptons.
So you're saying that Palm Beach in the summer is affordable?
It's a great deal. It's a great deal in Palm Beach in the summer.
I mean, give me an idea of the price comparisons.
It's probably a third of the cost.
Really?
A third of the costs as they are in comparison to the winter months, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
And in the summer months, you know, people get driven by rate as much more than they should be driven by value. And what I say to them all the time is, hey, look, just don't go by the rate, then have a conversation and say things like, can my kids stay free? Can they eat free? Will you throw in free Wi-Fi? Will you get rid of that dreaded $30 a night resort fee? You got a shot.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Come to the Breakers, because just when I think I've figured it out and know it all, they add another restaurant or they add two more kitchens. And my next guest knows a lot about that because he's the executive chef of all their restaurants, Anthony Signano.
Yes, sir.
I know, an Italian guy.
You got it. Yeah.
Yeah. And as I discovered, not from here, but he's next door to me back in Long Island. You're in Central Islip.
That's right. Neighbors.
You're a CI guy. I'm a Bayshore guy.
That's right. That's
unbelievable.
Right.
Well, welcome. How long have you been down here now?
I've been down here for 24 years.
Wow. So you've seen a lot of the changes.
Sure have.
When you came down here, how many restaurants were at the Breakers?
There was a main dining room. We were down there today. It was called the Florentine Dining Room. That served most of the dinner service. And I think there might have been, there was like a clubhouse-type restaurant.
For the golf course?
And that was
and that was mostly lunch.
And our beach club, which was lunch. But that was really it. It was quite the time. You know, everyone would show up at the same place for dinner every night, two nights a week, I think,
and order the same thing.
The same food.
Steak and potatoes.
It was very, very
maybe
old
some
classic.
Mahi-mahi.
I think of mahi-mahi once in a while, but back then I remember some poached salmon.
Poached salmon and lobster.
Some lobster tails and, you know, all the classic stuff.
Right.
You know.
And how many restaurants today?
We have 9 restaurants today.
Does that include room service too?
That does not include room service.
So that's even more.
Yes, it is.
So how many people working in your kitchens?
Boy, in the restaurants alone, we have about 120 cooks alone. And then we go on to probably about another 80 members of the stewarding team.
So when you're sitting in your office ordering food, that is a daunting task now.
Boy, we have luckily a lot of people ordering food through each outlet, but it is a daunting task. And what's daunting about it is really ensuring that only the best quality gets through our doors here. You know, when you look
at it. But you have because of the volume that you do and because of the quality that you're trying to, you know, continue, you have your choice for some really interesting purveyors.
We sure do. However, we do really try to stay as local as much as possible. So when we look,
so you're getting day boat fish.
We're getting a day boat fish. We have one vendor that will call us the day before and let us know what was caught, and then that's the stuff we're getting in primarily in our seafood bar. We partner with local farms. We'll meet with the farmers. We'll find out what they could grow best, and that's the product that we'll use through the great Florida growing season, which is for,
yeah,
for
people don't realize
8 months of the year.
Well, minimum.
Yeah.
Minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. So in the 24 years that you've been here, you've gone from, you know, lobster, steak, surf and turf, right, to what?
To really everything and anything. You know, each concept is distinct and unique, and each concept focuses on that food for that concept. So we are now at a Flagler Steakhouse. We have the great prime U.S. beef.
Let me guess, you have a tomahawk up there too?
We sure do.
Oh, it's a weapon. Yeah. Weapon.
It's a weapon for sure.
What is it, 64 ounces or something?
Yeah, it's not quite that big, but it's
big enough to hurt somebody.
Absolutely.
Columbo would actually find it as the murder weapon.
I think he would.
Yes, he would.
He would, yeah, with a million questions prior.
I have a question about that. How big was that steak?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, and so then, that's Flagler Steakhouse.
So we have Echo, which is an Asian cuisine, and it's really true Asian. You know, we have the Japanese piece with the sushi, and there's some Thai dishes. We have a beautiful sampling of New York style Chinese dishes on that menu, which are really popular.
Egg roll.
We have a shrimp egg roll.
Everything we do
has a twist on the classic item, you know. Big bold flavors there, and then we have our seafood and our beachfront front restaurants, as well as HMF, which is more of a global tapas type restaurant that really has authentic food from all over the world.
Well, that particular restaurant, I looked at that menu today. You have a sense of humor in that menu.
Just a bit, yeah. Yeah.
Which is something I never thought the Breakers had.
Yeah.
Honestly, when you came here, there was no sense of humor on the menu.
You know what? There was no sense of humor on the menu. And it was really, there was, even for the time, you know, I would say there was a bit of lack of relevance, where what we're really proud of today is through outstanding support from our ownership and our president and some great direction given that we're able to do really good restaurants here. You know, these aren't the typical hotel restaurants. These restaurants will stand on their own anywhere. And we're really proud of that.
We're talking with Anthony Sigignano. I'm going to get it right, man.
Yeah.
Italian guy from Central Islip. How dare you? I always ask this of the chefs, so you're no exception. I got to ask you, too.
Sure.
And you've had 24 years to give me an answer for this.
Okay.
So you ready? When you got here, or even last week, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
What was the one item you put on your menu that you said, man, people are going to absolutely love this, and it completely tanked? Or, because you're going to get two questions here.
Yeah.
Or what's the one thing you put on and I say, do I have to put this on? This is the ridiculous, most ridiculous idea. You put it on and people can't get enough of it.
Okay. So both of these examples are within the last 5 years.
Okay.
As opposed to going way back when. There was a dish at Echo. And again, I wish I could tell you I create all the food here myself. We have a team of wonderful and talented chefs that play a huge part in our menu development. But a dish was called Velvet Chicken. So it was like a chain.
Already we got a problem here. The naming of it.
But it's delicious. Could be the naming of it. But it was a...
What was in this dish?
Chinese dish. Picture it. It was a velvet corn cream sauce. Had some soy in there, some Chinese vegetables over white rice. And it was Chinese comfort food. It was just absolutely delicious. All of us that tasted it made it through our whole approval process. And you had to vote. Loved it. Loved it.
So the velvet chicken was a winner.
Got on the menu, wasn't a winner, didn't sell. We're not done. We didn't give up. We might revisit that, but it was one of those items.
How long did it last on the menu?
We had it on the menu.
Not
we gave it a good 6 months. We gave it a shot.
6 months.
But,
in 6 months, how many people ordered the velvet chicken?
In relation to everything else, I'll tell you this. It was probably in the bottom 5% of other stuff that was selling. But it was just
so when somebody ordered it, they would call you on the phone and say, you're not going to believe it. Some idiot just ordered velvet chicken.
Yeah, and half the time it was me. You know, but it was a delicious dish. We all loved it.
Okay, and the one you put on saying, give it up.
Something where at the time, again, going back 5 or 6 years, we did a boneless grilled Korean short rib. And that, you know, a little subjective for us, perhaps, especially when you get into cooking medium rare with short ribs and the style of the dish. And it's actually our number one seller in HMF right now. It's actually that
boneless Korean short rib.
Yeah, yeah. It's marinated in an Asian style marinade. We cook it. We have a coal burning grill called a Roboto grill down there, and it really gives it a beautiful flavor profile. But you know, those are probably the ones where I thought it might sell. I might thought it'd be okay, but for it to show up as in the top two or three items blew my mind.
Audible.com has more than 150,000 titles and virtually every genre. So check it out for yourself. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Flight 438. We'd like to tell you now about some important safety features of this aircraft. The most important safety feature we have aboard this plane is the flight attendants. Please look at one now.
There's a pattern here that I'm discovering about most of my guests on the show today. They're not from here. They're all refugees from Long Island or Washington, D.C. or New York, and my next guest is no exception. She's the food writer for the Palm Beach Daily News, but she's originally from Manhattan and Washington, D.C., so she's got it all covered as a refugee. Hello, Roberta Saban.
Nice to be here.
You've been coming down for how long?
Coming down? I'm here.
I know, but how long have you been
1993,
here?
1993. I bought a house here on the Enchanted Island.
So 25 years.
Yeah.
Happy quarter century. What keeps you here?
Oh, it's magical.
Tell me.
Well, it's like a kaleidoscope. Everything changes. There's nothing that stays the same when you're in the tropics. You're very much enveloped by what's around you. And it's a very exciting place to live. And I've lived in many different places in the world, and this is pretty dynamic.
Now, I'm going to go back 25 years and talk about the cuisine in Palm Beach, which was no great shakes 25 years ago, and then things changed, didn't they?
I don't know that it was no great shakes. I think that
they had a couple of good milkshakes, but I mean...
No. They had a lot of restaurants that were restaurants that catered to the people that were living here. It has changed, of course, dramatically in 25 years, but there were many good restaurants here, but people's tastes also have changed.
So tell me what's happened in 25 years.
There has been an explosion, in a sense, of people wanting to eat things that come that are grown locally. And although that people come for the winter months, people don't realize that when the Mediterranean garden is finished in the winter, the tropical world takes over.
Well, people don't realize Florida's got the longest growing season of any state in America.
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, so you have a great time here because sourcing is not difficult.
No, it's not difficult. And they've attracted a lot of boutique farmers who are ready to grow specialty products for the chefs and the restaurants in this area.
Well, one of the things that surprised me every time I came down to the Breakers, and it surprises me now, is how many restaurants they have at the Breakers and how many different kitchens they have.
Eight.
It's amazing.
And did you know that they did 90,000 or 100,000 covers from the catering department? That's covers. That's multi-course meals.
In addition to their regular...
A year. Oh, yes.
In addition
to the eight restaurants, right.
So what Roberta's trying to tell you is somebody got married.
More than married.
I know.
Events, but... galas, Happy Friday, whatever.
All right, but outside the Breakers, though, obviously, as this whole food culture has exploded here in Florida, and particularly Palm Beach, where do you like to go?
Well, after my house, I like to go to Chez Jean-Pierre, because it is a French restaurant, family-owned.
You think? Chez Jean-Pierre is a French restaurant?
But people have a name that they inherited, and some some guy from someplace else, Colorado, bought the restaurant, and Chez Jean-Pierre is a family restaurant in the second generation, a bastion in Palm Beach, and it's the kind of restaurant that's not so easy to find even in France today.
And what's their standout dish?
Believe it or not, it's Dover sole. One woman said to me one day, she said to me, I never even look at the menu. She said, I've been ordering Dover sole ever since I first started coming here. But they have things like foie de veau, delicious liver with onions in the French style. Everything that you order is there, is delicious.
Do they have onion soup?
Of course they have onion soup.
With the cheese on top?
With the cheese, and Jean-Pierre's specialty are scrambled eggs in a shell that are served with caviar on top.
See, it wasn't the scrambled eggs, it wasn't the shell, it was the caviar.
It was the caviar.
See, we know.
It's always the
That's
caviar.
That's what got your attention,
right.
Exactly. And it's a nice presentation, too.
Well, not only that, somebody said to him one day, I'd like to have the scrambled eggs with the caviar, and would you please put a couple of oysters on the plate, and then I'd like some smoked salmon, too. And that's been on the menu ever since.
Does it have a name?
It's something like Marty's plate or Marty's appetizer or something.
We just got through one French restaurant, and I was ready to go to dinner. So let's move on, because it can't just be one French restaurant, right?
Well, there's only one French restaurant. But I would say that no matter what the restaurants are, if Julia Child and Auguste Escoffier came back to Palm Beach to dine, they would be very, very comfortable in most of the restaurants here. There's always a marvelous steak on the menu and terrific seafood, because we're on the ocean here. So.
All right, but speaking of fish, what about the Palm Beach Grill?
Well, that's part of the Hillstone Group. Marvelous, always delicious. It's certainly the best of American cuisine, and every day they have different fresh vegetables. People will go in there three times a week. They complain because they can't get a reservation, so they've just opened up the Honor Bar, which you can go to at any time.
The Honor Bar?
Honor Bar, yes.
Which means?
Well, it's
you sit at the bar.
You sit at the bar. Well, it's very attractive. Nothing is exactly what it seems to be in Palm Beach, but it's a very...
So it's not an honor bar.
it's an honor fun bar.
I love how you qualified that.
But there's a bar, and then there are little tables around, and it's open for lunch and dinner, and the grill is only open at night.
And the best seafood?
Well, the best seafood is certainly at the Breakers in the seafood bar, because you have it swimming in the bar while you're sitting there eating, which is rather unique. But there has been a tremendous movement to serving local fish. That wasn't always the case. I would say 10 years ago, that wasn't really a high priority here. But people come to Palm Beach and to South Florida to eat fish. And we have some of the finest fish in the country, and shrimp.
And shrimp.
Our shrimp. We have those Key West pinks that swim and are sustainable and renew themselves every 100 days.
And then I have to bring it up because we're in South Florida, stone crab.
Stone crab, yeah. And that's another thing that's completely sustainable.
And by the way, with all due respect to Joe's in Miami, which I love, it's not the only place to get stone crab.
No, you can even buy them at the supermarket here.
But you see, that's like buying stone crab, I don't know. I wouldn't know how to do that, how to know what was getting good stone crab. Sort of like gas station sushi. But there are a lot of great restaurants in Palm Beach that will serve stone crab.
Yes, they have them in season. Yes, it's true.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. They talk about having them in season. People don't really understand how stone crabs are the most interesting regenerative species, right?
Yes, they are. Yes. They just take off one claw, and then they put the crustacean back into the ocean, and it swims away and grows another one.
If only life could be that way.
It's protected, yes.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so now we mentioned the breakfast.
It's always the sauce on the stone crabs, you know?
It's that mustard mayo sauce.
Yes, it's always the sauce.
That's what does it. That sauce I could eat on anything.
Of course.
It's or either that sauce or honey mustard sauce.
It's like snails. Who would eat snails without the garlic sauce?
The garlic and the butter.
Yeah.
I know. You put garlic and butter on cardboard, I'd probably eat it.
Delicious.
Are you speaking from experience?
No, I haven't eaten cardboard yet.
Well, one of these days we probably will. All right, but other than the eggs and the shell with the caviar, where do you go for a really great dive breakfast?
Oh, a lot of people like Greens, the pharmacy up the street.
It's a pharmacy?
Yeah, it's a pharmacy with...
And a luncheonette?
A luncheonette, yeah. Very, very old-fashioned, very old Palm Beach in many
ways. So basically, breakfast followed by antacid.
Exactly. Yes, of course.
One-stop shopping.
Tom's, right.
Fine, be that way.
Also, St. Honoré has come to Palm Beach, and people like to go there for a very posh breakfast.
Posh breakfast.
Posh.
A long-term
posh
breakfast. The ladies who lunch, but now they're the ladies who breakfast?
The ladies who breakfast, exactly, and breakfast meetings. Yeah.
Breakfast meetings to discuss breakfast.
To discuss what you don't realize, you have to have a very creative agenda in Palm Beach. There's your manicure, your pedicure, your massage, the new Chinese massage guy who's come and does only feet. I mean, it's very intense.
You are so heavily tasked.
Oh, yes. Yes,
I'm glad you took time out from your busy manicure schedule to come on the show today.
I know. It was tough. I had to fit you in.
Why do I believe this? All right. Now, before I lose you, we haven't talked about lunch.
Lunch. Lunch. Secret Place.
Yeah.
Piccolo Mundo, part of Renato's restaurant. Piccolo Mundo is a little carryout window in Via Meisner on Worth Avenue, just off of Worth Avenue.
And it's affordable.
Very.
If you are continuing on to another Southwest destination, please make sure that you check the monitors inside the terminal for your proper gate and flight information. If you are continuing on with another airline, we really don't care.
I am a passenger.
My next guest, I'm getting a little worried here because this could be an all formerly Long Island show. I spent my summers on Long Island. I still do. The executive chef here earlier on the show, a Central Islip boy. And my next guest, who's the columnist for the Palm Beach Post, another Long Island boy, Frank Serabino. How are you, sir?
Yeah, good, Peter. Bay Shore here. Central Islip.
Frank, that's where I live.
Yeah. No, you're kidding me.
I'm right on Maple Avenue in Bay Shore.
Okay. I was right by the Brightwaters Public Library, right a couple blocks to the east of that.
Right on the old Montauk Highway.
There used to be a Friendly's very close to there. I don't know if it's still there. But
we are doing Long Island geography in the middle of Palm Beach.
Fascinating conversation. By the way, Gumbo, I can attest to Gumbo Limbo Nature Center. It's a great place, especially if you're a turtle, but it's wonderful. And the name Gumbo Limbo has to do with a tree that's very common down here. It's a reddish, almost paper bark kind of tree, very distinctive looking tree, the Gumbo Limbo tree.
Thank you for setting me straight on that, because I wanted to know the derivation of that. Hey, by the way,
it's wonderful.
I know you're a Bayshore guy, so now we've got that in common. But of course, as I ask everybody down here, why Palm Beach and when?
Okay, well, I came down here for a job. I came to Florida. I was in Chicago, and I was looking for a newspaper job, and the Miami Herald hired me in February. So if you're in Chicago in February and you haven't been down here, and you come down here during a sleet storm, you will basically work at any job they give you because it's just so beautiful here in February. Of course, then after I took the job, it pretty soon got to be July and August, and then I thought, whoa, this is a bad mistake. This is a terrible place to be in the summer. But that was 1984. So
34 years ago.
I've gotten over it, and I've gotten very used to it. And actually, if you've lived here in Florida long enough, you actually like the summers better. Because
I agree with you.
It feels like it's your place in the summer, where in the winter it feels like you're just hosting a bunch of out-of-town guests that never leave.
Well, that's the problem, of course. Now that you're here, everybody from Bayshore comes down to see you in February, don't they?
Yeah. Well, you know, they occasionally, because I have my picture and my name in the paper, they'll call up and they say, I went to school with a guy by that name in Long Island. Are you related? Oh. There's a lot of overlap between Long Island.
All right. So now we know what got you here, but most importantly, we want to know what keeps you here.
Well, what keeps me here is I've been a newspaper reporter and columnist since 1984, and this is a fascinating place for news. It's just a wonderful place because the fact that everybody, and I say everybody loosely, but the fact that so many people are from other places makes this a really interesting place. And in a sense, everybody here is a refugee from something, you know, either from bad weather or dictators or high taxes or ungrateful children and grandchildren. Everybody's kind of here under some kind of duress where they never really planned to be here, but they're here, and it makes it really interesting. I think of it as a America as a Chinese checkerboard, you know, except it's not on the level. It's kind of tilted this way, and if you're a loose marble, you roll to Florida. So we're like a collection of America's loose marbles.
What an admission.
And if you're writing a column, you know, that makes it just that much easier. I keep thinking of how hard it would be to write four columns a week in, you know, Council Bluffs, Iowa or someplace, you know, but it's relatively easy here.
All right, but you know, and in the attempt to clear things up, it's not Palm Beach, it's really the Palm Beaches, isn't it?
Yeah. So the rule down here is if somebody says they're in the Palm Beaches, it means they're not in Palm Beach. And if somebody says they're in the Boca area, it means they're in Delray Beach, not Boca Raton. So we have some places that have a reputation of being sort of Tony and chic and stuff. And then the places that surround them try to capture part of that by saying, no, we're in the Palm Beaches. which means they're in West Palm Beach or Riviera Beach or Lake Orte. They're really not in Palm Beach. But it sounds better to say that than the actual city where they're from.
Now, is it really true that people can only pronounce this word one way? We're in Boca. We're in Boca.
Yeah. There's the people who aren't from here. It's Boca Raton, as if it was some kind of a phone furniture brand or something, you know. If they say Raton, that is a dead giveaway that they're not. And then just, of course, you know, Boca. And Boca has come to symbolize a lot of other things. You know, it's come to symbolize sort of the more concentrated sort of New York element down here is in Boca. So, for example, Boca has some great delis and things like that, and people who really are trying to duplicate the New York experience. You know, we say a lot of that in Boca. And as you go farther up, there's a little bit of resistance to that. So, sure.
Like that reminds me of the days in Miami Beach with Wolfies.
Right. Exactly. And there's, you know, there's no more Wolfies in Miami Beach.
That's
but
right.
But there are places. As a matter of fact, Boca just got a Junior's. The famous.
Oh, we know Junior's.
Just opened. Right. Just opened in Meisner Park, which is sort of like Boca's amusement park for adults. You know, it's kind of one of those mixed use developments with. It's like a place where people go after they've eaten too much and they want to walk. They go to Meisner Park and you walk.
And then they go to Juniors.
You walk and you look at all the restaurants you didn't eat at, and then you go for a piece of cheesecake at Juniors to really top it off.
I was about to say cheesecake, but you beat me to it. Yep.
Yeah.
You take cheesecake at Juniors. Get a stretcher.
Exactly. There are a lot of people here. Because we have an older population, there's a lot of humor. So, for example, there's a strip club here that taught the strippers how to operate defibrillators, because there are so many old guys that go into the strip clubs. They assume that one guy during a lap dance would just check out, you know, cardiac-wise. And so the strippers, they're all trained in how to, you know, administer the paddles to a guy that was a little overstimulated.
I have to think about that for a minute.
You don't get that in other places.
No,
like
you don't. That is a totally Palm Beach.
That is a Florida thing.
Unbelievable.
Like a Florida thing. We just had, you know, every week there seems to be another story that seems to only happen in Florida. This one was in North Florida, though, last week. We had a woman who was 37 weeks pregnant who thought she just ate a bad Chinese meal, and it turned out that's when she discovered she was actually in labor and going to have a child. She had no inkling up to those first 37 weeks that she was pregnant, and she went out and ate some General Chow's chicken and thought, "Ah, oh, boy, this chicken has really done me in." And it turned out, no, you're having your baby. So,
all right, you know what? You've solved the problem for me, Frank.
Yeah,
you have Chinese restaurants that deliver babies, and you have strip clubs that are all EMTs. I love it.
Exactly. There you go. So why would you go anyplace else?
Frank, you sold me.
It's also very comfortable. You can get very casual here year round. I mean, like a formal going out to eat in a formal restaurant is like wearing a shirt that has a collar on.
Hello? This is your captain speaking. There is absolutely no cause for alarm.
Get your motor running. Head out on the highway. Looking for adventure.
If I've taken anything away from my stay at the Breakers, it's this. When somebody says they've only been here a little while, it's about 10 years. I mean, the chef's been here 24 years. The guy up on the Flagler Club has been here 37 years. And my next guest is a baby.
Yeah.
She's only been here 22 years, and she's the general manager. Trisha Taylor, how are you?
Great, thank you.
But of course,
for the kind remarks.
But you're not from here, are you? You're from the state of Washington.
Yes, originally I grew up in Bellevue, Washington, right outside of Seattle.
I know it very well. But you've been in the hotel business how long?
Oh, since a youngster. I grew up in my grandparents' motels, right? Child labor. They owned and operated two motels
Did they have magic fingers? Do you remember magic fingers?
I don't remember magic fingers.
Magic fingers in the old motel days was a little box next to the bed, and it took quarters. And if you put the quarter in, the bed would vibrate.
No magic quarters, but it was my job to collect the quarters from the vending machines, and that's how my sister and I got paid from my grandpa. Whoever could scoop more quarters, right, in those little boxes, but they didn't go in the beds, just for Coca-Cola.
So you learned it the hard way, running motels.
Right. And so it's the exact opposite, budget motels to a landmark luxury property. But when people ask me about my roots in hospitality, I'm like, it's essentially the same. Obviously,
you've done all the jobs.
Right.
The thing that I saw in your bio that I thought was the one thing we had to talk about, you were a housekeeper.
Absolutely.
So you know how to make a bed.
Yes.
In record time.
Yes.
You can fold those sheets.
In one day.
That's
tough
what
work,
you,
right?
See,
tough
people
work.
People don't realize the maids have to do 12 rooms a day, right?
Yes.
And I've always said this, and I wrote about this once in my book. Hopefully they fixed it. But I said, here's the deal. What's the one item in your room that you want to clean when you get to the room? Remember, oh, the bedspread. I said, no, that's already dirty. Forget it. And they said, well, how about the phone? I said, yeah, well, you want to spray that off too. I said, but wait, what's the one item in the room that could be the dirtiest item in the room and nobody ever got it?
I think I can pass your test.
What is it?
The remote control for the television.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong. It was the glasses in the bathroom, and I'll tell you why. Because if your room was the 11th or 12th room that the maid had to do and she was running late, she didn't replace the glasses. Yeah, that little minor detail.
Yeah. Very minor detail.
So I said, take those glasses and put them under hot water for at least 2 minutes. You'll be okay.
Right. Well, luckily, we clean and sanitize them in the kitchen. Industrial machine, as we should use.
But those are lessons of a housekeeper. And
yes.
By the way, the number one item with bacteria in the hotel, you got it, the remote control. That's right.
And everyone uses a TV at some point during their stay, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, but those are all lessons that you learned that you now apply here.
Yes.
Exactly.
Or I caution my friends and family when they travel, right? Don't use those drinking glasses in the bathroom, Peter, unless you have assurance.
That's it, because Peter Greenberg said. But this is an entirely different experience, this hotel, because this is a machine. This is a legendary machine with employees that your turnover rate is very low.
Yes. We're very proud of that.
Yeah. And yet you've been here for 22 years. You've seen all the changes.
Right.
I mean, going from maybe one or two restaurants up to eight. You have the Flagler Club now.
Absolutely.
Right. Your kids' program, your kids' golf program.
Yes.
I mean, if you're a golfer and you want your kids to learn how to play golf, they should come here.
Right. This is the place for golf or tennis if your children desire that.
Exactly. What's in 22 years here, what's the biggest surprise for you about this hotel?
Oh, the biggest surprise.
Yeah.
From an employee.
Coming from a motel perspective.
Right, yes. No, thank you. From an employee perspective, I think the surprise, like you mentioned, me being the baby here, I think like so many new employees, you never intend to make it your lifelong home. You know, I never thought I would literally spend my entire adult life working in one place because, as you know, in the hospitality industry,
they move you around.
That's unheard
of.
Yeah,
let me put it this way. I go back to the days when I was a correspondent for Newsweek. If you stayed in a Newsweek bureau for more than 3 years, they either forgot about you or you're about to get fired.
Right.
Because they want to always move you around, right?
Right?
Same thing with hotel managers. They stay more than 3 years, especially in the bigger chain hotels like the Hiltons, the Marriotts. They rotate you.
Right. But and that's what makes us unique,
right?
Because we are independent.
Or either that, or they haven't found out. There's
right.
always that,
right.
You know. But the point is, if you do a good job here, you stay.
Right. And you want to stay because the culture is so incredible. Of course, Peter, as you probably heard in our history, that wasn't always the case. When I joined in 1996, we had a new president, new board leadership that took over a couple years prior, and they really began a transformation. A complete labor of love. And as you mentioned, that increased all of the amenities, the investment in the hotel, the investment in the people. Today's Breakers is a dramatically different place.
And let me say, when you say increase the amenities, I'm staying up in the Flagler Club.
Perfect.
That bed?
Perfect.
Oh,
yes.
My God. They should have that in every hotel room.
Yes, they should. But don't tell them.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.